This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I am Meera Sivasothi. 20 years ago, a mysterious disease caused young, healthy farm workers in Malaysia to fall ill seriously. A team of medical experts from University of Malaya worked around the clock to finally identify a virus called the Nipah virus. In the studio with us, Professor Dr. Wong Kam Tong, a pathologist. He was a member of that UM investigation team and he's also won a Merdeka Award for the team. He joins us today to discuss the new cases of Nipah viruses that have been reported very recently in India. Welcome to the show, Professor. How are you today?
Fine. Thank you very much.
Could you just give me a quick rundown, or let's revisit that period when, you know, we had that tough time when, you know, I remember we thought it was Japanese encephalitis, turns out it wasn't, and finally we identified the Nipah virus. Could you just share that period again with us? Can we revisit?
Yes, certainly. I think it was in 1989 when it first started, but that was in Ipoh. There was a...
horse, was it?
No, it was among in pig farms, actually. So there were some pig farms in Tambun area of Ipoh, whereby a few people came down sick with what appears to be a very mysterious fever that was associated with signs of brain infection. So at that time, of course, the Nipah being unknown, The natural thing was to suspect it's due to Japanese encephalitis, which is quite endemic in Malaysia. So I think people don't really know that it was a new virus until the disease spread to Seremban. And that was from the import of sick pigs. At that time, of course, the pigs were not sick, but they were already infected. Mm-hmm. They were transported to Seremban farms, and that's when very quickly these pigs became sick, spread it to many farmers, and that's really attracted people's attention and say, hey, this is different, it's not Japanese encephalitis. So that was the background behind it. Yeah.
Families who were pig farmers were just getting wiped out overnight. I mean, they were just dying. It was a very scary time, actually. What kind of challenges were involved in sort of identifying? How did we, in the end, decide that this was the Nipah virus?
Well, the person who discovered this virus was, of course, part of the team, and it's not me, and it's Professor Chua. So he got samples from the Seremban cases, and in a routine kind of way, he looked for viruses that might be the cause of it, including Japanese encephalitis, but he found something totally different. So at that time, I think he suspected, together with other people in the microbiology lab, that it was a different virus. And there was some indication that it was indeed different, but that they needed to go to CDC in Atlanta to confirm that. So I think he did do that, and that eventually came back as a totally different virus, and they call it Nipah. At that time, obviously, a new virus had no name, right?
Yes.
But it was called Nipah for various reasons.
And how is the Nipah virus different from the Japanese encephalitis?
Oh, very different. It first and foremost, of course, it belongs to a different family of viruses, right? Mosquitoes spread Japanese encephalitis. But in the case of Nipah, it was not spread by mosquitoes. It spread in actually very, very interesting ways, which at that time we didn't know. Mm-hmm. But in the case of Malaysia, Seremban in particular, when it first started, it was spread from pigs that became sick with Nipah, who in turn spread it to the farmers that took care of the pigs.
Which is very rare, actually. Usually, these viruses don't jump from animals to people, but it did in this case.
Yeah, yes, it did in this case. I wouldn't say it's rare that viruses who are sort of living happily in animals cross what we call the species barrier to infect humans. That has been known for a long time. For example, in the case of Japanese encephalitis, the virus lives and circulates among birds. And from birds, some of these viruses can cross over to pigs as well, as it turned out, also pigs. And from pigs, when mosquito bites the pigs, they can spread the virus from the pig to the human. All right? So that's via the mosquito. And so there is some spillover and involvement of animals. But in the case of Nipah, it's actually much more complex. Now they think that the original animal that has the virus is in fact what is called flying foxes.
Mm-hmm. The musang.
Not the musang. Musang is a...
The civet cat.
No, it's a bat.
Okay.
It's a flying fox, which is a bat.
Okay.
It looks like it's called flying fox because if you look at the face of the fruit bat. Mm-hmm. it has the face of a fox. That's why it's called a flying fox. But basically, it's a bat.
Okay. And since it was first discovered, how frequently have there been a Nipah virus outbreak? I understand there was one in Bangladesh in 2012. Mm-hmm. India has had an encounter twice, 2001 and 2007. And now very recently, in May this month, in the north of Kerala of India. And I suppose that's why we're having this discussion, because we don't hear very much about the Nipah virus. And it's sometimes a little worrying because the virus has been described by the WHO as having the potential of becoming the next deadly major outbreak. Now, is that an exaggeration?
I think overall it's probably a bit of an exaggeration. For example, you cannot compare it to, say, an epidemic due to flu, which is easily spread by aerosols. Aerosols meaning droplets that come from the body to the next person. So it's a person-to-person spread. That's easy. And aerosols depend on people coughing and you're nearby, you catch it. In the case of Nipah, however, you have to be in direct contact with the source of the virus. In Malaysia, the direct source was actually the pig, not the bat. Somehow the bat transferred it to the pig, but we usually don't encounter bats, so we don't come into contact with them. But in this case, the pigs, having been infected, come in close contact to humans and therefore get infected. In the case of Bangladesh, there's now very obvious evidence that there's person-to-person transmission. But again, it's due to direct contact. If you touch a person that has the virus and somehow it gets into your mouth or in your body, then you get infected. So, yeah, I think you cannot really describe it as being it's going to be the next potential epidemic because the way it spreads is a bit different.
Okay, but if it managed to get past the species barrier from the animal to the person, and then after that comes the person-to-person sort of spread, then that is of concern, don't you think?
Oh, yes, of course. That is, in the case of Kerala, as far as I know, I read that now there are 11 people who are infected. And I'm certain many of the cases, if not all the cases, was actually due to direct close contact with the original person who was infected with Nipah. For example, there was a report of a nurse who took care of the patients and she probably didn't know it was infectious. And you know how things are in certain parts of the country where you don't wear gloves or masks, you can get infected easily in that case.
Would you say the virus is still the same virus that we saw 2 decades ago in Seremban, in the Negeri Sembilan area?
It's the same virus, but not the identical one.
Yeah, because they mutate very quickly, don't they?
Yes, they do mutate, but in this case, I don't think, for example, that the Nipah virus from Malaysia traveled to India or Bangladesh. In fact, interestingly, that was one of the suspicions early on where they say, oh, some Bangladeshi worker came from Malaysia back to Bangladesh and spread it to the people there. But in fact, when they actually looked at the virus, what you call genomic structure, that means the genes inside the virus that characterizes the virus, they found it to be significantly different from the Malaysian one, and therefore that shows that the virus from Malaysia didn't travel to Bangladesh. And in this case, I really don't think it traveled all the way to Kerala from Malaysia.
Okay. And so what is that? What conclusion can you draw from that, that the virus is different in many countries?
That the virus is endemic among fruit bats in various countries. And if you look at the fruit bats that are found, they are, I think in the Southeast Asia region, there are at least two or three major types of fruit bats that are capable of carrying the virus as part of their, it doesn't affect the bat, but they carry it as part of a symbiosis kind of thing. And the bats usually don't get killed by the virus, but it has evolved together with the fruit bat over millions of years, and they have adapted to each other, and they don't kill the bats, and therefore they can survive continuously. But when they cross the species barrier, that's when problems start.
What are the conditions in which it would cross that species barrier? I'm just very curious. And why now? I mean, if it didn't cross that species barrier until, you know, recently, or has it always been happening and we didn't realize?
I think it's a bit of both, really, because in the past, we probably don't know the odd sporadic case of encephalitis. Oh, somebody died of a brain infection, a brain fever, and that's it. You don't know. And you say, oh, maybe it's the Japanese encephalitis, and that's the end of the story. But on the other hand, there are probably some factors. Some people believe that ecological factors might have something to do with it. For instance, forest clearing might chase the bats away from the usual hunting ground where the fruits are, and say move on to the farms that have fruit trees. And when they eat the fruits, the saliva, which may contain virus, may be on the half-eaten fruits that drop to where the pigsties are, and the pig eat it up and get infected. So I suspect we don't know the true story now in Kerala, how the virus from the bat, we assume that that's the case, got into to infect the first human. We don't know that.
We
are waiting for more results.
So like Malaysia, it was the pig in India. Do we know? Just the fruit bat?
We don't know about the pig's connection in India. The other area that you mentioned was in earlier on in the 2011, I think. That place was very close to, that is a place called Siliguri, which is just north of Bangladesh. And we suspect again that there is probably direct from bat to human, although there's no proof of it. There was never any pig involved. But the majority of the cases in India at that place was in fact person to person. So because these people get admitted to the hospital, mm-hmm. and the nurses and the healthcare workers didn't know much, and they treated like any other ordinary case and got infected. And I think close to 100 plus people died in that tragic accident.
Okay. If the fruit bat actually infected the fruit, I'm just curious, Professor, and if I picked it up and I ate the fruit, can I actually get it?
There is a strong suspicion that that could happen.
Right.
Because, you know, viruses can survive in the environment, especially in a wet environment. When it dries up, it dries quickly. But if it's still wet, I presume a half-eaten fruit may be wet, right?
Yes.
So it jolly well could do that. In the case of Bangladesh, there's yet another interesting spin to the story of how the bat got to humans. And that is, the bats apparently at nights would fly to this, what is called palm sap collection center. These Bangladeshis, they have a practice of harvesting palm sap, which is supposed to be very sugary sweet, from a tall palm tree. And how they do it is to hang a pot underneath that palm tree. I think they probably put in a spigot or something to allow the sap to flow into the pot overnight. And at nights, apparently, the fruit bat has been found to drink from the palm sap. So the next morning, when the Bangladeshis pick up the pots, many of them are in the habit of either selling it fresh in the market or drinking it themselves. And if the fruit bat were to urinate into that pot, you can imagine.
No. Oh, no.
You can imagine what kind of virus gets into it. So this Nipah story is fascinating in a sense. There are so many ways that they can be spread. I mean, we are learning more and more about this. I mean, who knows, in Kerala, they may have discovered something. In fact,
but we don't know yet.
We don't know yet, yes. So that's the interesting unfolding story. It's very, very unfortunate that this should happen. But frankly, I'm not surprised that it could happen, because I think many of the endemic, many of the local populations of flying foxes have the virus. It's just when they have the opportunity to come out and contaminate the sources of food or drink.
Watch out for those flying foxes.
Yes, yeah, right.
We're discussing India's Nipah virus. I mean, Malaysia did undergo, or we went through, a difficult time 2 decades ago when the Nipah virus did affect us, the pig farmers in Negeri Sembilan, for an example. We'll come back and find out more about, you know, how we can contain this and what all of this means. I mean, it's gone quiet for 2 decades here in Malaysia. Mm. Will we see an emergence of the Nipah virus? We'll come back and find out more up next on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I am Meera Sivasodhi. In the studio with me, Professor Dr. Wong Kam Tong. He's a pathologist from University of Malaya. He's Faculty of Medicine, actually. And we're discussing the Nipah virus. For those of you who aren't terribly familiar, 2 decades ago, we did have an outbreak of the Nipah virus in the Negeri Sembilan region. It was up north for a short while, but then Negeri Sembilan was hit the most, I remember. Lots of lives were lost in that process. We first thought it was a case of Japanese encephalitis. Turned out it was an entirely different virus called the Nipah virus. And as Professor Wong spoke to us about just now, it was a virus that, you know, we took a while for us to identify, and now it has affected places like Bangladesh in 2012 and very recently in Kerala on the 25th of May, 2018. Do you think we will see an emergence of the Nipah virus again here in Malaysia?
Well,
we still have fruit bats, I'm assuming.
Yes, and they'll be around for a long, long time. And there is always that potential, I believe. In our case, I think following our experience with the cleaning up of the pig industry, maybe a transmission or a spillover event via the pigs might not happen, perhaps. But you never can tell. But there are other opportunities for it to spread, like, you know, direct bat encounters of humans in some way, contaminating our food and drink. That's always that possibility. Because zoonosis means diseases that are spread from animals to humans. Zoonosis is one of those things that is almost impossible to get rid of, because you are not going to eliminate all the fruit bats in the country or in the world, for instance.
I mean, they're part of the ecosystem.
Yes. In fact, they play a very important role for all sorts of reasons, pollination of plants and that sort of thing. So zoonosis is definitely here to stay. There's no way you could eliminate it as such. I mean, and then vaccination is really very hard to do.
I was going to ask you, because there's a vaccine for Japanese encephalitis.
Yes.
Is there one for the Nipah virus?
There isn't one for human use, but there is one vaccine that has been marketed for vaccination of horses in Australia. As you know, the Australian horses, and indeed some human cases, came down with a related virus, yes, which is not called Nipah, but is in the very, very closely related to it. It's called Hendra. And I believe that the vaccine that is developed for Hendra may cross-protect with Nipah. But nobody has really tested it on humans. I don't think there's any commercial value for it anyway.
Too few cases, yes, I suppose. Yes, yeah. So who do you think is at risk of the contracting the Nipah virus?
Well, healthcare workers, definitely, because you never know. I mean, the odd case comes in just like exactly like what happens in Kerala. You don't know. So that's why the healthcare personnel have always been told to practice general, universal protection against such things, like mandatory wearing gloves and masks when you deal with a potentially infectious case, because you don't know what you're dealing with. And when you do find out, I'm so sorry, you've already got the infection. So that's one. I think healthcare workers have to adopt these universal precautions. And of course, I think people who come in contact with wildlife, I think animal husbandry, industry, like farmers also have to increase their levels of awareness, of environmental sanitation. All these things should help.
And what are the symptoms?
Of Nipah.
Of the Nipah virus.
It sort of starts off with very non-specific fever, cough, and lethargy. Those are the early signs. When they do become severe, then you get drowsiness. The patient falls into a coma. There will be signs of nervous disease involvement, such as paralysis, abnormal movements. All these things will come in. And then, of course, the virus also affects the lungs, so you're going to get severe respiratory problems. So these will be some of the main signs and symptoms that we expect.
But it doesn't mean that everybody who contracts the virus is going to get complications like you just explained.
That's exactly right. Yes, so it depends on, I suppose, the dosage. I mean, you could be, say, exposed to a minimal amount, you can get infected, but your symptoms are very mild. Maybe you get a slight headache, slight fever, it goes off, and that's the end of it. And those that are severely affected will can die. In fact, I think in our Malaysian cases, 40% of our cases end up in death, whereas in the Indian subcontinent, it could be as high as 70%. So can be a very deadly infection.
Yep. So we've not seen, just for the record, we've not seen the Nipah virus since 2 decades ago?
That's as far as we know, yes.
Okay. Yeah. You spoke about the pig just now, you've spoken about the horse, you've spoken about the fruit bat. What makes the pig, for an example, a good intermediary or catalyst to harbour this virus from the fruit bat and pass it on to the human being?
Right. This virus we have found is an amazing virus in the sense that it can infect almost all mammalian cells, meaning animals which are mammals, birds, we have found birds, rats, hamsters, of course the larger animals like horses and pigs. The virus is really very is promiscuous in a way. Mm-hmm. It infects almost everything. So in fact, as we found out later, actually in the Seremban incident, not only was the pig infected, there were dogs and cats which were also infected. But it's just because the pig industry was, so many pigs were involved, so they were the main transmitters of the disease, right. The reservoir of the disease.
The largest in numbers.
Yes, yeah. Yes. Whereas many other animals can get infected. So it's just that the virus is really, can infect just about anything. So that's what makes it dangerous.
Right. So it's really beyond our control, the way I look at it. I mean, we can't be going paranoia now and, doing anything drastic to manage the population of any of these animals. What do you suggest we do at the moment? Or do we just wait for something to happen and then react again? And do you think we're ready for it?
If I'm not mistaken, I don't know whether they still do it now. Very soon after the Nipah outbreak, there was a massive exercise to take blood from pig farms throughout the country as a surveillance program to see whether pigs have these antibodies to Nipah. Because when you have exposure to Nipah virus, your body will produce antibodies against this virus, which can be measured. So in the case of the pig, if, for example, they say do a random sampling of all the pigs in various parts of the country and they find that there's antibodies against Nipah, that would alert them to the presence of Nipah. But I believe they have stopped it. I could be
mistaken.
Monitoring
that.
Yeah, monitoring okay. that, yes. So that's one way. The other way is eternal vigilance, I'm afraid. The doctors have to be alert.
Yes.
You know, I must say that the doctors in Kerala were immediately suspected it and they sent the right samples for testing. Otherwise, people would just spread the disease on and on and on. So I thought that was pretty good. So in a way, my colleague who discovered the virus ought to take some credit for it to having established it as a major pathogen. And then people, I mean, of course, it's very sad that people get infected. But yeah. But the fact that we in Malaysia have done a lot of work on the science behind the virus, how it works, how it attacks people, the Kerala people sort of learned from this incident, which is good, I think. So we feel, in a way, some gratification.
Of course, and hence the Merdeka Award the team for identifying it. Do you think some of us have developed, if you spoke about the antibodies, do you think there is some amount of immunity?
Yes, certainly.
Amongst the population.
Yes. We have found many cases that have mild symptoms or no symptoms to be positive for the antibodies, meaning that they have been exposed to the virus, the body recognizes it as a virus and develop defenses against it. And that were effective to kill off the virus and therefore they never got infection or never became sick. So yes, indeed, yes. If you are exposed somehow, you could jolly well have the antibodies. So some of us might in fact have been exposed.
Without you knowing it.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
But I should imagine that that can't be very high number.
Yeah, because the sort of area that was affected wasn't terribly huge was it?
Yes.
So in terms of management, do you think we're ready to manage it?
Yeah. Well, I think it's mainly supportive. Unfortunately, I think people have tried to look for drugs that might kill off the virus, but I think we're not quite there yet. Because it's very, very hard to develop and confirm or test a antivirus drug that is effective because we don't have anything to test it against. You can only test it in animals, right? Let's say you infect an animal, the animal comes up with an infection and you give the drug to the animal and the animal gets healed. That is one way of showing. But then you still have to prove it in humans. So for Nipah, that has not happened yet. But I believe, let's say, for example, if somebody would be desperately ill with Nipah and if there's somebody has got some antibodies from someone else who has purified the antibodies, they could give it to this person in the hope that it works. Although it's not like sanctioned or not given the permission to be used. But in a desperate situation like this, because if you don't give it to the patient will die anyway.
Yes.
So that kind of humanitarian grounds for an untested vaccine or a drug might be used. But at the moment, there isn't really many candidates.
So I'm just trying to imagine an outbreak and So what, our best bet is to start culling again whichever animal that's actually spreading this virus to the humans?
To prevent spread, I suppose that would be one way, yes. Say, for example...
Because that's what we did the last time.
Yeah, so for example, there's a flock of chickens or a farm of chickens that tested to have Nipah, for instance. And yeah, I think that would be one good quick way to get rid of the virus.
The virus. Yeah. So for those who survived, any kind of long-term effects for them?
Oh, yes. In our series, in our cases, about 50% of them, about half of them, in fact, did not have sequelae. The sequelae is a word to describe long-term outcome. Whereas the other half have some kind of side effects from the infection, such as, you know, paralysis or abnormal movements, because as you well know, some part of the brain is damaged. So that being the case, their normal brain functions won't be quite normal, would it?
No.
So that is the situation.
Were you not afraid when you worked on the virus? Were you not afraid of contracting the virus?
Actually, when we got the tissues to work with, we didn't even know it was a new virus. I personally handled some of the tissues from infected patients, wearing gloves, of course, mm-hmm. but I wasn't wearing any mask. But I was very sure that I didn't splash things around. So, in fact, I was tested for the antibodies, but I was negative. So
okay, well, thank goodness for that. Well, antibodies may have been a good thing actually, but you didn't develop the antibodies.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Any advice for prevention?
For prevention, well, it's very, very hard to prevent against a direct contact zoonotic infection. Well, I suppose you can say that don't touch animals, and after touching animals, you can
wash your
hands. And I suppose that might work. It's really very, very hard to prevent these kind of occurrences.
So 2 decades down, do you think we know a lot more about the Nipah virus?
Oh, yes. We know that it's much more widespread. People have done studies in Thailand, in Cambodia, and of course, India too. And they have found actually the virus is very much resident in fruit bats. And because the fruit bat population spreads all across from northern Australia right to Africa. In fact, they also have found evidence of the virus in African bats. So a wide swathe of the world, in fact, could potentially be exposed to Nipah. So that's the frightening part. But I suppose the good news is that now that people are more aware of it, they might take sensible precautions about against doing things that are hazardous, like eating contaminated animal products. Like, for instance, in Philippines, in 2015, some people in Mindanao came down with what is strongly suspected to be Nipah. And the people actually ate sick horses, which were infected with Nipah. And having become sick, they spread the infection to their next of kin, mm-hmm. who were in close contact with them. So very, very sad. But I think if these stories get out and people are aware, you know, you don't want to eat uncooked animal meats, and you wouldn't want to touch animal products like blood and all that without washing up. That might help, really, I think.
Okay. Well, what would be your message as a pathologist working on the Nipah virus? What's your message on the virus itself?
It is a really, really lethal virus. And we are still learning more about it. And I'm just hopefully that we can learn enough to, say, develop some antivirals just in case people come down with the infection. At least we have something to fall back on. Otherwise, we really have nothing, really.
Yeah. Okay.
So
Thank you very much for sharing your thoughts with us. That was Professor Dr. Wong Kam Tong, a pathologist from University of Malaya, Faculty of Medicine. He's a professor and senior consultant there, speaking to us about the Nipah virus, which affected Malaysia 2 decades ago. It's now in the state of Kerala, is sort of experiencing the spread of the Nipah virus over there. Fingers crossed, we hope nothing of that sort will, watch those fruit bats is all I can say. Thank you very much for joining us today. This is The Bigger Picture on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.